Chapter 14. Aspen. Aspen stared up at the ceiling. For some reason, prayers for healing and growth came easily to him, but things like this, where he had to ask for something not usually in a cleric's repertoire, he struggled to find a graceful way to say it. After a long moment in which he opened and closed his mouth at least three times, and Rouge started making go-on motions, he began. "So. Great Goddess Gina, I know that vengeance isn't usually your area, but we require some assistance with a difficult problem. As you requested, we are searching for those bringing violence and hate to Bright. We can take care of judgment in the heat of battle, but what do we do with those on the periphery? Those who feed the violence through malice or inaction? Please help us." Lyric had returned from the bedroom, his role fulfilled, and now stood beside Aspen. As he finished speaking, the boy muttered, "Amen," and then flushed when everyone looked at him. He shrugged. "Habit," he said sheepishly. The room filled with an expectant silence, and Aspen thought he could hear his own pulse pounding in his veins. Time passed with no response, and the faces of the members of his group were becoming crestfallen even as George started to grin, showing yellowed teeth. Then Aspen started to glow. His feet lifted from the ground, leaving him hovering in midair. He felt his arms rise from his sides without his urging, even as his clothes began fluttering in a growing wind. His hat flapped on his head, clinging on only with the desperation of habit. "Oh poop," Rouge said in a voice filled with consternation. "The goddess Gina has heard your prayer. As her champion, she grants you one of the following skills to be used in pursuit of her goals. Smite instant death for anyone who violates Gina's word. Use of this skill reduces you to one health point. If it is used on an innocent, it will fail, and they will have the opportunity to slay you instead. Compassion, the target will instantly relive the suffering of those they have harmed, and they will have the opportunity to change their ways. Be aware, however, that this skill will fail on those who are truly evil. Can only be used once per target. Metamorphosis, when used, this skill changes the target into a random type of half-breed. They must interact with some number of other sapient beings. Number varies depending on the severity of crimes committed, with at least 10% being people who knew them in their previous form, before they can revert to their original race. Cannot be used on people who are already of mixed race. You have 30 seconds to choose. 30. 29. 28. Aspen instantly dismissed Smite. The chance that he would use the skill on someone deemed innocent by some very fuzzy rules was far too high, and besides, if they wanted people dead, well, they could do that without Gina's help. He was torn, though, between the other two. He liked the sound of compassion, but unfortunately he had a terrible suspicion that only those who were at least partially good would truly be swayed by this. At that, if they knew that the experience wasn't repeatable, they could shake it off over time. "Metamorphosis," he said as firmly as he could, adding, "Please?" Rather belatedly. The light around him strobed to brilliance, and for a moment he felt as if he was split in two. One part of him remained in his body, as it was changed in some essential way. The other part hovered just outside, watching in fascination. Then he snapped back together with a nearly audible pop. The light, wind, and thankfully, hovering all stopped, and he returned to the ground. Shakily he reached up to rub at his stinging eyes, but paused, noticing something different about his hand. There, wrapping around the middle finger of his right hand, starting at about the middle of his fingernail and ending at the center of the back of his hand, was a metallic tattoo that looked as if it were made of liquid silver. At first it was a butterfly, wings trembling in an unfelt breeze. As he watched, it shifted into a tadpole, tail wriggling, then sprouted legs and grew into a frog. Next, a grub swirled into a cicada, followed by something that looked like a tadpole at first but changed instead into a lizard with long swaying fronds around its head. By now his companions were crowded around him, all staring at the shiny new mark. "That's awesome," Lyric sighed, leaning in closer. "You're going to need a glove or something," Rouge said practically, shooting her friend a meaningful glance as she elbowed him out of the way. "Truly you are blessed by the gods," Vaughn murmured, bowing his head with respect and perhaps a hint of fear. Aspen cleared his throat, clenching his hand. "Thank you, my capricious goddess," he thought silently, and he would have sworn he felt a teasing hand tug at his hair. Turning back to George, who was pressed back against the cabinet as hard as he could from his awkward position, Aspen extended his hand. The metamorphosis. George's body twisted in on itself, flickering in strange cubic patterns. Aspen had to squint hard against a terribly disorienting feeling, and finally closed his eyes completely, suddenly dizzy. When he blinked them open, George's massive frame had been replaced by a much smaller one. The man was still balding and pot-bellied, but now the belly hung above a pair of skinny bow legs, and his barely recognizable face sat in the middle of a knobby chartreuse head, crowned with what were easily the largest ears Aspen had ever seen. Whatever half-breed George had become, Aspen doubted there was any human involved, but Goblin definitely played a very large part. George struggled to his gnarled feet, his now ridiculously oversized clothing dropping from him to land in a puddle with the ropes that had been serving as his bonds. He stood there, trembling, his only remaining covering the ubiquitous off-white underclothes. No. His clawed hands scratched at his green skin, and an expression of horror oozed across his face. He looked fearfully at the bedroom door. "They'll kill me," he whimpered. "I have to talk to 10 of them friends." He struggled to make himself understood around the unfamiliar pointed teeth and long tongue that filled his mouth. "Beau, they'll kill me if they see me." Aspen glanced at his friends. Rouge looked both fascinated and appalled. Vaughn looked grimly pleased. Lyric just looked disgusted. Vaughn stepped forward, closer to the shaking figure. He now towered over George, and the formerly large man shrank away, clearly unused to being physically intimidated by anyone. "Go," Vaughn almost hissed. "Find out what it is like when everyone around you hates you without reason. When you are attacked only for your birth. If you survive, remember." Opening the door, he shoved the goblinoid into the street, where he looked around with a panicked expression, before scuttling away. Aspen lowered the hand he'd raised when Vaughn yanked the door open, sighing softly. "Vaughn," he asked, "are you aware that if he speaks to anyone and if they believe him at all, they'll come running here to see what he's talking about?" The elf's eyes snapped back to Aspen, his face going blank, then flushing with dark color. "You're right, my lord. I'm sorry. We'll have to hurry." Lyric groaned. "And we're going to have to take that other guy with us. We haven't gotten a chance to talk to him yet." Vaughn looked down shamefaced. "I did not think. I'm sorry." Rouge reached out and took the young man's hand, holding it reassuringly while glaring at Aspen. "He just found out his family is probably dead, and it's mostly that guy's fault. Obviously he's not thinking clearly." Aspen shook his head, one eyebrow going up. "I only asked a question. And Vaughn, don't start my Lord Ingni or I'll have to actually get upset. I'm just Aspen." He heaved out a sigh. "Now let's get out of here with our prize. No way to hide the fact that we've been here now, so we may as well try to make it look like a robbery, or maybe someone came to exact revenge on these two for something. I'm sure there are plenty of people who dislike them." He looked over at Rouge. "Can you stealth with someone else yet?" Her eyes flickered as she looked over the skill description, then waggled her hand. "My bae. Not someone who's conscious for sure, but maybe while he's out, if I can carry him. I mean, I can definitely carry him weight-wise, but no matter how much you guys call him little, he's still bigger than me." She glared around a little, lower lip pouting out. Aspen resisted the urge to pat her on the head. His hand wouldn't do him any good if it was severed and made into a glove. "We'll figure something out." He looked at the young elf. "Vaughn, destroy this room. Quietly but thoroughly. Avoid the traps. Back to Lyric. Take everything in their storage chests and put them in your inventory. Take the chests themselves if you can. There may be other things in them that we've dismissed as worthless, but that may yet be useful." Calm Topaz eyes assessed Rouge. "Let's go look at our little friend. I have an idea." 10 minutes later, Vaughn slipped into camouflage and cracked the door open, peering outside. "Nothing yet," he whispered back to the other three. Rouge, who was wearing a man slightly taller than herself in a sling improvised from a bedsheet and tied across her shoulders, grumbled, "This is stupid. Why don't we just roll this guy up in a carpet and pretend we're here to do some renovations while we're at it?" Aspen chuckled. "I didn't see a lot of carpet in this house, little thief. Besides, this is more fun. All right, let's—" Suddenly Rouge smacked herself in the face. "Hold up, hold up. Wait. I have the perfect thing. Oh my gosh, why didn't I?" Her voice trailed off as she gazed into space, fingers twitching. Her cat who ate the canary grin crept over her face. "Oh yeah. Let's try this. She swirled her hands a few times, striking a pose reminiscent of something Aspen had seen Flu Flu do more than once. Moon Prism Power Substitution. The girl whisper yelled, and a moment later, a perfect replica of George stood in her place. Oh my gosh. The behemoth stared down at his thick-fingered hands in amazement, deep voice cracking as he spoke. That is so cool. He started giggling, which was so disturbing that all three men took a step back. And good ol' what's-his-name here counts as a stolen object, so, the heavy face grimaced, well, bum nugget. I had a boost of an hour to the skill, but mentioning that I stole something, she scratched her head, voice dropping to a mutter as her eyes unfocused, or maybe saying what it was? She looked back down at them, shaking her head. Anyway, it counted as the theft being discovered, so I'm back to 15 minutes. Well, just over 14 now. Quickly, she shucked the sling, then picked up George's friend, tossing him over her now very broad shoulder. Poor guy, she said, grinning cheekily and flashing George's square yellow teeth, had too much to drink and I'm taking him home. No one will suspect Gippy of kidnapping his own buddy, right? Plus, if some crazy half-goblin starts running around claiming something's wrong, no one will believe him because they just saw good old Gipster a minute ago. Come on. Aspen was thinking fast, slotting this new skill into the plans that had been coming together in his mind. He shook his head sharply. Time for that later. Go ahead then, Rouge. Try not to be noticed though, if you can. Vaughn, reset the traps behind us. Lyric, we'll stay back with Vaughn and try not to look like we're with Rouge. Everyone, get your masks on. Rouge and Vaughn wrinkled their noses simultaneously as they realized that the horrible stench had become familiar enough that they were starting to ignore it. They yanked up their face coverings. Aspen's mask was still in place, and Lyric, who couldn't really tell what the big deal was about, just shrugged and put his on as well. Rouge reached over and tugged at Vaughn's curls, moving them so the straps of the mask held them down, concealing his ears. Her shy smile would have been sweet if it hadn't been on George's face. She turned and began to walk away, whistling tunelessly and staggering a little, as if she'd also imbibed a bit more than she should. Vaughn slid his slim hand through the door, releasing the string that would set any traps that hadn't already been sprung, and Aspen spared a moment to regret that they had ransacked the house. If he'd known Rouge could transform into George, he would have left it looking as it had when they entered, so that Goblin George would be undermined even further. Aspen winced slightly though. He had a suspicion that the real George's initial reaction would be correct anyway, and the transformed half-breed would be beaten at best, and likely even killed without getting a chance to tell his story. The three males looked at each other, drawing in a simultaneous buoying breath, before following the whistling. Somehow, they all made it out of the neighborhood around the tannery without any significant difficulties. A few people looked like they recognized George, but they all ducked their heads and scurried away, so Rouge didn't have to pretend to actually be the hulking brute. Nobody looked concerned or surprised at seeing the smaller man draped over the bigger one's shoulder, either. Shortly after they started garnering curious looks from people who didn't seem frightened enough of George to know him, Rouge dropped into a side street. When they came up on her, her burden was lying on the ground, still thoroughly passed out due to Aspen's continued gentle magical pressure on his mind. He hadn't been entirely certain that would work, and he was relieved to see that it had. Rouge was back to her normal appearance, and her fingers were twitching, as they did when she was working on something in her heads-up display. When the trio entered the alley, her attention switched briefly to them, then returned to whatever she was working on. After a moment, she looked back. Okay, I think we need to do this as quickly as possible. Schmuck here, she nodded to the man at her feet, clearly knows more than Giddyup did, and we need to get him to talk. There's a Thieves Guild safehouse nearby, one of the temp ones, so I can take guests there, and it won't matter because they'll take it off the list once I say I used it. The girl looked over at Aspen, expression pleading. So, can you carry him from here? Because that felt really icky. I mean, he wasn't heavy, but ew. She shuddered in disgust, and Aspen nodded. Leaning over, he easily pulled the limp figure up by one arm, then glanced at Vaughn, who looked human enough as long as his mask concealed his delicate elven bone structure. If they went much further from the tannery, however, people would start getting paranoid about seeing a group of masked people wandering the streets. Vaughn, grab his other arm and drape it over your shoulders. Let's go for good buddies helping their friend home, if we can. Once Vaughn had joined him in awkwardly draping their burden across their shoulders, awkward mostly because the man's foot was dangling on Aspen's side and his toes were dragging on Vaughn's side, Aspen smiled reassuringly at Rouge. Let's go. Without another word, Rouge slunk off, slipping from shadow to shadow down narrow back streets so smoothly that Aspen quickly realized that his young friend barely needed stealth to stay unnoticed. At least she would if she wasn't being followed by three awkward idiots, one of whom was complaining that he could have helped Aspen with the unconscious man more easily than Vaughn, who was actually a hair's breadth shorter than the boy. Aspen kept his suspicions that the lad's strength stat was probably not actually high enough to carry the limp weight to himself, and just concentrated on keeping his burden from slipping off his shoulders. He was already feeling the strain of walking in the crouched, twisted position he'd been forced into, and he dreaded what his back was going to do to him later. Fortunately, the safehouse really was very close, and they only had to cross one busy intersection during their journey through a series of narrow back alleys Aspen had only vaguely been aware existed. A few people on the larger thoroughfare cast them a dubious look, but when Aspen staggered into a wall, pulling Vaughn and the limp figure with him, then broke out into slightly hysterical laughter, they looked away in disgust. Well, except for one man who was burdened down by a towering stack of boxes, as he scurried along behind a rather imperious-looking lady. His gaze was definitely more longing than contempt. Once they were past that junction, however, they soon saw Rouge pull a large board from where it rested against the wall. She leaned down to murmur in the ear of the man sleeping beneath the board, and he rolled over to allow them passage, though one sharp eye cracked open to watch as they entered the door concealed behind him. Once they were all through, with everyone except Rouge forced to duck, the man pulled the board back and resumed his position. Rouge immediately dropped to the floor with a grunt, then grimaced and rubbed her rear as best she could without moving. "Stupid pod," she muttered. "Okay, I got us here. Now how do we get this bozo to talk?" Aspen and Vaughn gently lowered the man to the ground, afraid to disturb him too much, though one would think that if he was going to be able to resist Aspen's continuing encouragement to remain asleep, he would have done it already. Indeed, as if to underscore how deeply he rested, a line of drool slithered from between his loose lips, and he snorted a bit. Aspen shook his head. "I suspect that my usual techniques wouldn't sit well with you, lass, and I must confess my conscience lies less easy when I use them outside of a genocidal war for survival. I could try something with magic, but—" He paused as he felt a strange tug on what he had recently figured out was a tether to his goddess, much the same as the one he had with his companions and his new staff, only with him as the pet in the bond. "I think that would be unwise." Vaughn growled a little. "If I weren't bound by the oaths of Arnspiga, I would take that burden from you, my friend. Unfortunately, I am meant to aid the helpless, not torment them, no matter how they may deserve it." Lyric waved his hands. "Don't look at me. I'm not waterboarding anyone or anything, even in a game." Aspen paused. "What is no, never mind. Rouge?" Rouge cleared her throat, looking from Aspen to Lyric and back again, though she refused to meet her young friend's eyes. "Well, I do have one idea." And that is how Lyric, after much protestation that his music wasn't that bad, found himself standing right beside their prisoner's head, holding his lute in a white-knuckled grip. Aspen nodded to the boy, and then released his hold on the supine man's brain. Their prisoner instantly jerked awake, gasping in a deep breath of air, which Aspen promptly knocked out of him with a well-placed boot to his gut. The man curled up, groaning and struggling against the ropes that bound him. "Oth," he choked in a breath and stared, wild-eyed, as Aspen crouched down beside him, face once again concealed by mask and lowered hat brim. Aspen restrained a sigh as he realized they'd forgotten something basic. "Again. Rouge, what's his name?" The little thief girl looked like she wanted to sink into the floor, and Lyric, too, looked embarrassed. Both travelers squinted, though it seemed like Rouge had to work at it much harder. "Leonard. Sorry, Aspen." He turned his head and gave her a tiny wink with one eye. "We all forgot. We've been among friends too long." Turning back to Leonard, Aspen spoke in a deep but conversational tone. "We just wanted to ask you a few friendly questions, Leonard, but you and George assaulted my friend here." He indicated Vaughn, who was barely visible in the pale and dusty rays of lights that filtered down through the poorly built ceiling. "Then when we came back to try again, you attacked him again." He picked up Vaughn's heavy hunting knife, which he'd stabbed into the dirt floor by his boot, and twirled it, grateful that Bertie and Plum had been so entertained by sleight of hand when they'd been little girls. Ignoring the heavy blade flickering between his fingers, he continued. "Now George already talked to us and—" Leonard's black eyes were darting around the small space in which they found themselves.
Where's Gippy? What did you do with him?
Aspen sighed theatrically and planted the knife 2 inches deep in the ground beside the other man's ear, trimming a few stray wisps of hair as he did so.
George talked to us, so we let him go.
Unhurt.
He held open his now empty hand, and his new silver tattoo glinted in the dim light.
Damn it, I forgot about that.
I'll need to get some gloves.
Forcing himself not to yank back his hand, he curled it closed and pulled the blade from the ground in an effortless movement.
Now the question is, are you going to talk to us so we can release you unhurt too?
Or are you going to force us to do things we don't want to before you talk?
Because, he leaned in, knowing his eyes were an eerie pale gold in the dimness, you will talk to us.
Eventually.
Leonard's throat bobbed as he swallowed, and he leaned as far from Aspen as he could.
I dunno nothing.
We tried to tell our Trifu.
Ah, elf friend there that we dunno anything.
Just woke up one day, and they was dead or gone.
Terrible thing.
His nasal voice lifted into a pathetic whine by the end of this, and he widened his eyes, trying for sad, or maybe nauseated, if Aspen were to guess. Aspen reached into the shadows behind him and raised the dull knife and 2 hoods Lyric had found. On closer inspection, 1 hood was black around the bottom, while the other one was trimmed in deep red, though they were otherwise identical.
Now.
George was positively eager to help us. He said you 2 fine upstanding citizens let a concerned group know that you had outsiders in your midst. He told us the group who took the woman and killed her husband and father were called maskers and wore hoods just.
He shook the limp cloth in his hands.
Like
this.
Once again Von's knife was embedded into the dirt, this time leaving a tiny scratch in the skin just over the man's carotid artery.
He yelped and jerked away, face contorting in panic.
Fine.
We found those in TH house when they was taken.
I kept them is all.
Aspen twisted the knife in the dirt, and the razor-sharp blade scraped against the scrawny throat.
George didn't know anything about them.
So what about them made it worth concealing them from your best friend, eh?
I'd think if you found them while you were together, you would have split them.
Maybe put them on, had a little fun acting the part of villains?
Pretend to be something you aren't?
He leaned close again, sliding the knife from the earth as he did, and lowered his voice to a hoarse whisper.
Unless it wouldn't be pretending for you.
Leonard began to squeal like a pig in pain, writhing against the ropes that held his arms tied.
No?
I can't tell ye.
They'll know.
They make you swear to their god, and if you tell anyone, he'll crush your head like an egg.
Aspen rocked back on his heels, eyes as wide as those of his victim.
A god?
What god would be involved in this?
He looked over at Rouge.
Do you know what god he means?
Not Arasa.
She'd never be mistaken for a male deity. Arasa was the goddess of assassins and murderers. Anyone who killed outside war or duels came under her purview. She was usually depicted wearing a skin-tight red costume, and her femininity was pronounced.
Rouge shook her head.
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of gods.
Somebody went way overboard there, even given that the advertising promised a god for everyone.
It's ridiculous.
He huffed a beleaguered sigh.
Well, now I know why Jean is involved in this.
The gods generally let us clean up our own messes without interference, but if this god is poking his nose in where it doesn't belong, it would explain a lot.
Lyric looked back and forth between Aspen and Rouge.
The bard's face was visibly pale, even in the faint illumination.
Does that mean I don't have to do this?
'Cause I'm cool with that.
Both Aspen and Rouge jumped a little, having once again forgotten that Lyric could hear their conversation.
Nope.
Alas, no.
They shared an amused glance as the boy wilted a little.
Fine.
Can we get on with it then?
Aspen turned back to the prisoner.
What is the name of this god?
Beads of greasy sweat formed around Leonard's receding hairline.
Dunno.
He squealed again as Aspen raised the knife.
No.
He'll kill me.
At the reminder that the little man had supposedly taken an oath that would allow his god to kill him if he told his secrets, Aspen frowned. Certainly it was true that one could make a binding oath before the gods, but he had never heard of the retribution for failure being so dire.
A lifetime of pox, yes.
Silence for a month. Loss of all profits and status that the person had gained because the oath existed was a common one.
Then too, there was something off that Aspen had noticed about Leonard's, what? Spirit? Mind? Animus? Soul? Whatever it was that Aspen could now see around all living beings, with even the slightest effort. Leonard's wasn't exactly greasy, like the demonic swineherds, but it could be described as frayed. It looked something like a woolen cloak that had been stored improperly, and had become a feast for moth larvae. Aspen had dismissed it as part and parcel of the man's cruel nature, but now he thought he should take a closer look. Cautiously he pressed his right hand, the one with the new tattoo, on the man's chest, feeling the ribs bend as he pinned the slight figure down on the ground so he couldn't move. Aspen. What are you doing? Rouge's voice was faintly shocked. Lyric sounded equally concerned, but also very mildly thrilled. It looks like you're going to kiss him or something. Aspen growled in disgust but didn't pull back, staring into the terrified eyes inches from his own. Give me a minute. He opened his life sense wide. The first thing Aspen noticed was that Leonard's spirit was, for lack of a better word, flimsy. The frayed effect that he had noticed before was much more pronounced, and he felt like it would actually give way with the slightest touch of Aspen's mana. To test this theory, Aspen first reached out and very gently prodded Vaughn's spirit, causing the young elf to shiver and look around as if someone might have snuck into the room with them. Making a mental note to apologize to the young elf later, Aspen considered the feeling of his spirit. It was something like touching a bubble blown from the processed sap of a certain tree, found only in countries far to the south of the human-held lands. The bubbles had become a fad when Lark was 7 or 8, and Aspen had purchased a great number of them for her birthday party. Like those bubbles, Vaughn's spirit was springy, smooth, and resilient, almost pleasant under his mental touch. When Aspen attempted to do the same with Leonard's spirit, however, it felt almost sticky, as though clinging to the power in his touch. The pliable warmth was entirely missing, and it seemed more like a soap bubble ready to pop, except that no soap bubble had ever been so bedraggled. As he pulled his mana back, he saw that the spirit clung to him like a web. When he managed to break free, he saw that the area he'd interacted with now looked brighter and stronger than what hung around it. The thing was draining his mana to try to repair itself. Shuddering, Aspen pulled every bit of himself back, using his life sense to see what was going on. At first, nothing else seemed obviously different in the midst of the general malaise. Then he saw that the area that had recovered slightly was now fading once more. Looking closer, he could see that one of the frayed strands of spirit stuff wasn't dangling free like the rest. Instead, it narrowed to a thread so fine its presence was only detectable by the fact that the attached spirit held still in whatever served as an ethereal breeze. Very, very carefully, he prodded at the area where the thread would be if it were visible, and felt something oddly cold and unyielding. Instantly, he felt weaker, as if some noticeable portion of his power had been sucked away, and when he pulled back, the coldness clung until he managed to force his physical body to fall backwards unceremoniously onto his rear. "Great Gina," he whispered, "something is eating him." The horrified gazes of everyone else in the room fell on him. Leonard's eyes were wild, and his voice was a cracked whine. "What do you mean, eaten me? Nothing's eaten me." Aspen shook his head, climbing to his feet. "I don't know what you've done, but somehow you've given something access to your very soul, and it's eating you from within. Depending on how quickly this progresses, I doubt you'll survive its predations much longer." The little man quivered and curled into a fetal ball. "I knew it wasn't right," he muttered. "I told him. Told him I didn't feel right. They said. He began to sob, pitifully. Aspen, Vaughn, Lyric, and Rouge retreated to the corner farthest from their prisoner, and Aspen explained what he'd seen. Rouge was horrified, but Vaughn seemed grimly satisfied. Lyric simply asked plaintively if it meant he didn't have to play the lute to torture the guy, because seriously, his playing wasn't that bad. "What do we do now, Aspen?" Rouge asked, tugging at a braid nervously. "I mean, if the guy really is linked to some big bad, then he might actually die if we force him to tell us what he knows. Which yeah, he deserves to be punished, but that metamorphosis thing should be enough, right?" Aspen shook his head. "I don't know. We could probably force him to talk, but I believe the risk that his oath will truly take his life is high. I could use metamorphosis, and we could send him out and let things take their natural course. I could." He flickered his eyes to his staff, where it rested, momentarily quiescent, against the wall. I could try to sever the bond with Gina's help. She clearly has no liking for what is happening here, and I have the sense she would assist me if I ask.
He grimaced. Though we saw how that worked last time.
And to be honest, I suspect that there would be some risk to me in trying.
Bruges' response was immediate.
Forget it then. We'll find out the information some other way. We can put that dagger in the map somewhere and wait for the baddies to come to us.
Aspen shook his head at this. These maskers likely have some way of verifying the accusations.
George said it takes a few days for them to respond.
Why wait if they simply come in and kill the accused without checking?
Lyric raised his hand.
Oh. I saw a vid like this once.
It's a sting operation. Have some actual half-breeds move into a house, then use the dagger. When the villains show up, he smacked his hands together sharply. Boom.
You've got him.
Vaughn pondered for a moment, then sighed.
I would volunteer myself, except that I don't know if they would attack full-bloods, or if their hatred is reserved for those who have crossed the barriers of race.
Also, this would take a minimum of 3 days, likely more, and in the meantime, others are dying.
My sister, if she survives, possibly among them.
I would prefer haste.
The elf's gray eyes shifted to Aspen, and his voice was grave.
If you are willing to undertake this risk, I believe it is worthwhile, both for your own quest and mine.
I would owe you a great favor.
No. Rouge's voice was a little frantic, and she glared at Vaughn.
He just promised not to take unnecessary risks.
This isn't necessary.
We can.
Aspen gently laid a hand on her shoulder. If it seems to be going wrong, I'll stop.
Rouge, my friend, I appreciate your concern, but I believe this needs to be done.
The slim girl threw her arms around him, burying her face in his chest.
Be careful, okay? She asked, voice muffled.
Don't be stupid.
He chuckled, hugging her back.
When was the last time I did something stupid?
When she reared back, mouth opening to respond indignantly, he grinned, lifting his right hand to show the shifting tattoo.
Don't answer that.
She stuck her tongue out at him.
A few minutes later, Aspen was crouched over Leonard once again. The man was attempting to thrash away from him, so Rouge was gripping his feet, while Vaughn held his bound hands pinned.
Lyric, who had gratefully returned his loot to storage, attempted to help, but his strength was so low that the panicked prisoner simply knocked him away.
No, 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 no.
Don't mess with it. You'll get me killed.
Let me go.
The man on the ground was howling in fear, and Aspen finally had to stuff his own shirt into his mouth. Even then, hoarse sounds continued to emerge from his throat, and Aspen could only hope that the guard outside wouldn't choose to investigate.
Cautiously, Aspen opened himself again. His vision quickly locked onto the stiff section of Leonard's spirit where the thread was attached. Now that he knew what he was looking for, he wondered how he could have missed it in the first place.
Moving slowly, he placed stick beside the invisible thread and sent it a request. Instantly, the dainty leaves twisted and reformed into something much more akin to a tiny sickle. The blade of the sickle rested just on the far side of the thread from Aspen, who held his arm extended and rock steady. With the smallest of motions, the razor-sharp blade would meet the thread, and he could only hope it would sever the thread instead of becoming stuck itself. This time he didn't try to form words for the others to hear. He simply sent a mental prayer to his goddess.
Gina, I'm sorry for bothering you twice in one day.
We found a man who seems linked to another god in some foul way. He'll die if he tells us more, and we need what he knows. Please help me cut the tie so he can speak in safety.
In his life sense, he saw his stick begin to glow, much as Aspen had when he had prayed to Gina before.
Thankfully, this time the light seemed limited to the spiritual realm, and the others didn't flinch from it.
Aspen, however, flinched when words once again appeared before him.
The goddess Gina has heard your prayer. As her champion, you may now use the following skill.
Winnow, separate the wheat from the chaff. The divine wind of Gina's holy garden will assist you in cleansing those who have become impure. If the damage was done as a result of their own choices, it cannot be repaired, but if they are innocent of wrongdoing, this will also help heal some of the damage.
Be warned that this skill must be used with great care, as it can irrevocably damage the soul of the target.
This skill is a divine gift. If this skill is used for other than its intended purpose, it will be reclaimed.
Unpleasantly.
Releasing his breath in a hiss of relief, Aspen triggered the new skill. A wind began to blow, circling the miniature sickle. In his magical vision, he could see a sparkling silver wind wrap around the blade, glimmering brightly. The heady scent of plumeria and lilac filled the room, and everyone drew in a cleansing breath. Leonard's body relaxed beneath Vaughn and Rouge's grip. Aspen's wrist bent. Beneath the curved and brilliant edge of his sickle, something caught, pulling tight as the string of a lute. Leonard's body arched and his eyes and mouth opened wide, though eerily, he made no sound other than the scraping of his body on the dirt floor. In Aspen's ears, however, a new sound made itself known. Growling. It was the sound of a beast, utterly devoid of sense or humanity. It was Leonard, but not, and Aspen knew that whatever was on the other end of that strand had noticed what he was trying to do. Then the thread parted, and the sound cut off as suddenly as it had begun, leaving an uncanny silence that was quickly filled by the whoosh of Gina's wind as it wrapped around the little man's ragged spirit. The aroma of that wind became earthy and sad, filled with patchouli and water-dampened soil, and then whisked away, vanishing into the mortal scents surrounding them. "Holy smokes, Aspen!" Rouge exclaimed, releasing Leonard's feet as if they burned her. "What happened? Did you do it?" "I thought I just smelled," she stuttered, then finished lamely, "as something I smelled before somewhere else." Vaughn's head was bowed, one hand resting on his heart as the other traced a symbol on his forehead. He looked up. "That was undoubtedly a moment shared with a god, my lord. Were you able to sever the connection?" Lyric frowned. "What are you guys talking about? Why is everything about smells today? This is some kind of gimmick to get headset users to buy a pod, isn't it?" He looked up, presumably speaking to some pantheon of his own. "Well, joke's on you, 'cause there's no way I can afford a pod, and my parents definitely aren't getting one. So cut it out." Aspen looked down, examining Leonard's spirit once again. The sad thing looked as pathetic as before, undoubtedly because he'd brought this upon himself, but it moved freely now, no longer anchored by the alien thread. Sighing in relief, Aspen stood, using stick to help pull himself to his feet, even as he told it could return to its preferred shape. In a shower of tinkling chimes, it did so, practically glowing with pride. Aspen patted it approvingly, and it chimed again. A faint whiff of lilac touched his nose. "It's done. I can't fix the damage since he brought it on himself, but it will at least not worsen. I don't know if a—" he hesitated on the word soul, and instead said, "spirit can heal itself or not, but I suspect—" he fixed the exhausted and barely conscious Leonard with an icy glance, "it depends on what is done with it in the future. Some life changes are undoubtedly in order." Rouge, who had moved to stand beside him, suddenly sucked in a breath and reached up to touch Aspen's hand where he gripped stick. Aspen. Suddenly certain he knew what he was going to see, Aspen looked over. Indeed, the index finger on his right hand was now sheathed in silver. The skin and nail of the finger gleamed faintly at the tip, then softened into gently billowing swirls, traveling toward his knuckle. There it vanished toward his palm. He shifted stick to his left hand and held out his right, palm up. There he saw a perfect reproduction of a sickle surrounded by clouds, presumably representing wind. The wind touched the mercurial tattoo on his middle finger, and when a butterfly swirled into existence there, it looked as if it was being lifted on a breeze. Rouge grabbed his hand, poking at the tattoo, as if to see if she could affect the creatures there. They continued moving, ignoring her prodding fingers. "Shoot. Oh well. That's still cool." She looked up, much as Lyric had, speaking to the ceiling. "I want one. Can you, like, make it a quest reward or something?" Her braids suddenly lifted as if a hard wind had buffeted her, and she staggered slightly. Her lower lip poked out. "Fine. Be that way. Next time someone owes me a favor, though, we're going to have a talk."